short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this.
The American people, I think, is good people. They have not to charge with the guilty.
Welcome back to the Cold War, episode 204. We continue with Chinese foreplay. And in this episode, Ray is going to talk more than he normally does.
Yes, which means it will make less sense, but you will laugh more. What do you want? What do you want from me? No, I was thinking about something you said at the end of the last show when America is obsessed with, you know, what's Stalin thinking? What's Russia doing? What's going on in Moscow? But at some point, should have asked the question, excuse me, boss, is there any chance that Mao might be making any of his own decisions? Because if that's true, then we need to be a lot more careful with, you know, dealing with this country that's got hundreds of millions of people, you know, and they've got all these veterans from the Civil War and World War II. But again, no one's giving Mao either the time of day or thinking that he can make any decision that Stalin doesn't want him to make, which is completely ridiculous. But America was putting all the eggs in the Soviet basket. Clearly, that wasn't the case because Mao, like anybody else, is going to be defending his borders. Having said all that, so it will come as no surprise to anyone that there was a joint State Department / Defense Department meeting on November 21st, and the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, Hoyt Vandenberg, and the Secretary of Defense, James Forrest, said that if MacArthur's advance to the Yalu River was stopped by the Chinese, that they, the Chinese, should be told to quit the area or we will hit them in Manchuria. So even though we're halfway around the world and we're getting closer to your border, if you don't stop now, or if you do anything, we're going to make you stop. And if we have to, we will come into your territory and teach you a lesson. So if Mao did not have a reason to defend his border now, he certainly has one now. So the Americans are being very aggressive about this. And Mao's like just talking to his people and going, what do we do? Let's get some troops down there. Let's make sure they don't enter China proper. And that's what he's obsessed about, and that's completely understandable.
And there's no evidence that anybody at that meeting said, I don't think that's a good idea. We're going to threaten the Chinese. Can we just take a knee here for a second? Can we take a moment? Yeah. Take a minute.
Is anybody going to second that? Oh, you're all seconding that. Oh, fuck.
Really?
Okay, I'm alone here.
Does nobody want to talk about the fact that they, according to the CIA, as we said in the last episode, they've got 30 to 40,000 troops already in country and another 700,000 on the border ready to come in?
Yeah.
Is that, should we really be threatening them, really? Is that really a good idea? Anyone want to give any dissent to this at all?
Bueller? So, don't get me wrong, America's fucking awesome. I mean, we are made out of the image of God himself. I get that. But it's a couple, you know, tens of thousands or whatever American troops versus almost a million Chinese. I mean, at some point, you've got to think of the maths, and no one is.
Well, it looks like Washington decided they were going to call China's bluff on this. As we said last time, Washington was sort of convinced itself.
Yes.
Did you put your hand up there? Was that a hand? Yeah. I wasn't looking at the screen. Why is your hand up? Two hands. Okay.
What if it's, sir, I'm sorry, what if it's not a bluff?
Sorry, I don't understand your question.
What if the Chinese, hear me out, it's going kind of crazy. What if the Chinese are really willing to fight and die to make sure no enemy American troops cross their border? What if it's not a bluff?
Still not getting it. Sorry, okay. I can't. So what?
There's a reason you're in charge.
What language do you speak English, okay, motherfucker?
I have an answer to this one. If you don't get your shit together, we're all going to be speaking Chinese. You hear me, motherfucker? So quit pissing off this powerful nation. But I'm done. I take my seat.
Now, as we said last time, that Washington had sort of convinced themselves that China either couldn't act because Moscow wouldn't let them, right. or couldn't act because they didn't have the capabilities and they were just sort of putting on a show to save face. Or that they were putting on a show because they were actually scared of Americans and that's why they were acting not scared. As I said, it's like finding your wife fucking another man in your bed and deciding that it's proof that she loves you. Like the contortions of logic that they had to go through here.
He looks just like me. Oh, you do love me. Sorry, go ahead.
That said, though, in the defense of the Americans.
Please, I'd love to hear this.
That's not a phrase you hear come out of my mouth very often.
No, but this is being recorded. Yeah.
In defense of the Americans at the time, there were good reasons for the West to assume that China did not have the capabilities or that had bigger problems to deal with than North Korea at the time. China had just barely finished their own civil war, devastating civil war, as we know. They had to get rid of the Japanese on top of that, of the civil war. In 1949, about 40 million Chinese were affected by natural disasters. On top of the famine was the problem of communist bandits running around the country. Now, people might think, well, hold on, the Chinese were communists. Yes, but it was the other communists, the Kung Fei, as they were known, communist bandits. These were the Kuomintang communist bandits that were trying to destabilize the country. Whilst the Civil War was sort of technically over, of course, the Kuomintang, then based in Formosa, now known as Taiwan, were, you know, trying to send incursions into the country to try and destabilize, fuck shit up. They were dealing with that. Over a million of these communist bandits were rounded up or killed between May of 1949 and May of 1951. So, you know, they got a big problem. A million bandits in your country trying to, you know, destabilize shit, fuck shit up.
Yeah, but we said this earlier. So China's plate's full. I get that the civil war, the natural disasters, the nationalists going staying in country on purpose with weapons, trying to destabilize the region. I get all that. And Mao doesn't want to deal with Korea. He does. I mean, I get all that. But if you're going to march a whole bunch of people to my border, and you're making it quite clear that there's a good chance that you're going to cross the border, no matter how many things I got going on my plate, no matter how many plates I've spinning in the air, I now have to reprioritize. I don't want to, and it's going to be ugly and messy, and I don't have the resources. But Mao and the Chinese have no choice because the Americans and the South Koreans are coming full bore. And MacArthur's already made it clear what kind of person he is. So Mao has to rethink his priorities because he now has a new threat that he cannot ignore.
And he's in the same situation here that the Soviet Union was in 1979, as we've been talking about on the Bullshit Filter with our Afghanistan series. If Mao does nothing and allows the US to basically crush North Korea and let Syngman Rhee take over the North with U.S. military backing, Mao has an enemy on his border, right? Like the Soviet Union would have had Afghanistan as another enemy on their border if Pakistan and what they thought at the time was the Americans took control or had their puppet government take control of Afghanistan on their border. So that's not a great situation. Like the same analogy that we've been using in the Bullshit Filter series we can use here, it would be like in 1950 if, let's say, Cuba, well, no, Cuba wasn't even communist at this stage. Like, say, the Soviet Union had took over Canada or took over Mexico and had a million troops on the border of the United States, America would have lost its fucking mind. That's exactly the same situation Mao is in here. It's the situation that he's dealing with.
It's okay when we do preventative stuff. It's not okay when the communists take preventative measures. I mean, I can't be more clear than that. When we directed, we're the good guys.
Yeah. Americans didn't even think that China would take preventative measures to stop that. It was inconceivable that they would do that. Now, getting back to the problems that China had, though, internally there were secret societies that had grown up to resist land reform.
Yes.
As we know, when communist governments take hold, one of the first things that they try and do is land reform, agrarian reform, because quite often these countries had been in a feudal state, as China had been for you know, 10,000 years.
Right.
The land had been in the hands of the wealthy, the elite, the warlords. Mm-hmm. The communists were trying to make it more equitable, give the people control of some of their own land so they can grow their own crops and their own foods and have their own houses and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, there are always going to be people who don't like that. They don't like reform.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got secret societies that are spreading dissent across China at the time, probably funded by or being supported by the Kuomintang, even though the Kuomintang themselves were communists and would have done the same goddamn thing. If they were in power, they're going to try and use whatever opportunities they have, even if it's ideologically difficult, to support dissent inside of China.
Yeah.
And China was still trying to secure what it considered to be its own borders. In October of 1950, the People's Liberation Army had marched into Tibet, completed its occupation only in 1951. Meanwhile, in the east, they were still trying to figure out what to do with Formosa.
Right.
Obviously, the Kuomintang, led by Chiang Kai-shek, had taken Formosa, formerly, traditionally, part of China. They'd taken it, put up a flag, said, fuck you, we own this now.
Yes, and we're China. Yeah.
And we're China, and it's right, you know, off your border. It's right, it's just across the water.
Exactly.
And they started building, this is the Kuomintang, were building invasion barges, 5,000 junks, airfields to support the assault on the mainland. You know, they were building all of this stuff to attack the mainland. Meanwhile, China's building the same sort of thing to attack Formosa.
Right.
You know, it's a big problem.
Yes.
It was the Su Yu, the deputy commander of China's Third Field Army, said that it was going to be the largest campaign in the history of modern Chinese warfare when they went head to head with Formosa. So this is a big problem.
Yeah, and not only that, so not only do you have natural disasters, you've got America helping Chiang Kai-shek, you've got the secret societies, you've got guerrilla warfare going on inside the country, but also, as we all know, soldiers and armies cost a lot of money, and the communists of China don't have a lot of money. Mao is still trying to demobilize a whole bunch of his troops, because remember, by the time the civil war is over with, he's got millions. He's got millions of men under arms, and he needs them quit. He needs them to be discharged from the army. He needs them to get back home to their farms, to their factories, to the city, wherever. Go back and be productive, you know, citizens of this country, whatever. Get out of the army, because an army does nothing but suck up money and doesn't do anything until there's an actual war. And so he needs these people back in the civilian life, and it takes time to do that. And now that he's got this threat of Formosa, and now that he's got this threat of Korea, can he really afford to do that? Because I think he's got like 5 million men still in 1950 under arms. So he's going from, I got to get you guys out of here because I need you to be civilians, to, oh my God, I actually might need some or all of you because now I've got a two-front war. So again, for Mao's life is anything but easy, or he's got a massive headache at this point, and it's not going to change anytime soon because MacArthur is coming. And he's made it quite clear that he's coming to the Yalu River.
And maybe over it if they give him any provocation.
He wants a reason. MacArthur hasn't been hard in a decade, but he gets a little wood just thinking about crossing the river. He wants an excuse because he wants to have that one more before he dies. Incredible miracle military man, just like he did at Bataan. This is his chance to go down as an even greater hero to the American people.
So, again, these are the lists of reasons that it was reasonable to question whether China had the capability or the willingness to really get involved in a major war with the United Nations forces.
Right.
Because they're dealing with a lot of shit. On top of all of this, even though they have a pact of friendship now with the Soviets, which had been signed in February 1950 and sort of helped heal the rift between Mao and Stalin.
They hugged it out. Right, yeah. They hugged it out, yeah.
The China didn't get a lot from that in the way of material assistance. Stalin had demanded that a whole bunch of Soviet advisors would come in and run things in return for major equipment.
Right.
And Mao was like, fuck you, and the Georgian horse you rode in on, vodka
Mao
man.
Knows that game. Mao knows that game quite well. Stalin's used it for decades. Yeah.
First, you send your advisors. Next, I'm on the I'm purged because you don't like something I'm doing or something. This is my country.
Right.
We don't take orders. Like contrary to how the Americans were thinking at the time that Mao wouldn't do anything without Stalin's say so.
Right.
Mao's very much his own man. He goes, look, we may be 25 years late to the game.
Right.
But you don't tell us what to do.
Right.
We're past being told what to do by other imperial powers. Thank you very much.
Those days are over. And if I could, just all those reasons that you just listed, all the internal problems that communist China has, and now they've got to deal with the Americans. I mean, again, he doesn't want to do it. And I don't know if we can emphasize or if we haven't emphasized this enough. The Chinese have been having a lot of discussions with themselves. Zhou Enlai, Mao Zedong, and all the other greats are sitting there and they're talking about this. They're like, this is a big deal. You don't just willy-nilly mix with the American military. And so they're sending men down to the border. They're doing it nice and slow. They're doing reconnaissance. They're trying to gather information. They're doing all the stuff. Again, they don't want to do it, but necessity demands that they guard their own border. So this is a hell of a time for them. But the only good thing that they can say is, well, we do have a lot of war experienced men with weapons, and I can send down a couple million if I need to. So again, let's not forget that China did not want to do this. They were going very slow. They were sending out warnings. They were doing reconnaissance. They were doing everything they needed to do to let the Americans know what would happen if they crossed over, and then they were getting ready to do something about it if the Americans came over. This is not a bluff by China.
Getting back to the issue of military equipment, because they're not getting it from the Soviets, the PLA is still equipped almost entirely with either arms captured from the Japanese or arms captured from the Kuomintang, which, of course, have been supplied by the Americans.
You're welcome.
But yeah, they were the Chinese army at this stage was still not a professional military force.
Yes,
it didn't have the training necessarily to train much beyond maybe a regimental level. It was mostly still a guerrilla army.
Yes,
didn't have a lot in the way of heavy weapons, and it just wasn't a modern army. It was a ragtag bunch of volunteers that were, come into being to fight a civil war.
Yeah.
It wasn't in any way, shape, or form ready to go up against the United States, as neither was Ho Chi Minh's forces in Vietnam, neither was the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Needs must.
This is, you do what you can. But on paper, it looks like these developing countries, these poor countries, which China was at the time.
Right.
No way they can stand up to a modern military machine, even one that's as unprepared and as untrained as the Americans were at the time. But as you've said before, when you're defending your own home against invaders, you find a way, right? It gives you massive incentive.
If I could real quick, and I apologize, you brought up a really interesting point. Mao and the communists won their civil war with guerrilla tactics. Remember, America gave Chiang Kai-shek $50 billion in weapons and supplies over however many years. So the point is, you're going to take your guerrilla army and suddenly turn it into a professional army. It doesn't work that way. Like you just listed all the reasons of what they don't have. But they do have their experience, their experienced fighters. They are in the mountains of North Korea. It makes it hard for the Americans and the South Koreans to get to them. So they've got a couple advantages, but you know, they wish they had a lot more. But if you have a guerrilla army, they're going to want to fight like a guerrilla army. And the Americans are going to find that out very quickly.
50 billion.
Is it? It's either 5 or 50. Shit, did I say 50? I meant 5 billion.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't think 50 billion. The Marshall Plan was only like 11 billion.
Yeah, so I think it was 5 billion. Sorry.
4.43 billion they got from the US. So, yeah.
And now Mao's got some of those weapons.
So, you know, for political reasons and military preparedness reasons, mm-hmm. late 1950, it appears that many Chinese leaders were very reluctant to see the country get involved in a war with the West, right. including Mao himself. It just didn't. It just was. You don't want to add another fucking problem when you've got all these other problems, really right. genuine problems that you're doing with it. But, and again, this is one of the reasons that I think it's important for us to spend some time on this, on the foreplay, not jump straight to the bang bang, mm-hmm. is that, you know, Washington literally pushed Mao into this.
That's fair.
Right?
That's a fair statement. Yeah.
Not only with giving MacArthur the approval to push his forces right up to the Chinese border, mm-hmm. the Manchurian border, technically, right. Not only with the threat that if China tried to intervene, they would march into Manchuria, but also their sort of support of Formosa.
Yes. Well, yes.
On the 27th of June, 1950, Truman had made a statement declaring that, quote, the occupation of Formosa by communist forces would be a direct threat to the security of the Pacific area and to U.S. forces performing their lawful and necessary functions in that area.
Would it really?
Well, you know, basically, say this is part of the Truman Doctrine, right? Well, we can't right. have that because it would be Okay, so let's break down this statement. The occupation of Formosa by communist forces. Who are the Kuomintang? Communist forces, motherfucker!
But they're not our communists. I want our communists.
No, they are. The Kuomintang yeah, yeah. No, are your that. Communists.
I get that. Yeah, to my mouth.
The So that doesn't make sense, but I don't think even most Americans at the time knew that the Kuomintang were communists. So, or originally been communists anyway. I don't know. They've probably given that up at this stage.
If they take that island, it's a direct threat to the Pacific area and to the U.S. forces who are performing their lawful duty. I mean, that's a fucking stretch, to put it nicely.
What lawful and necessary functions did the U.S. have off the coast of China?
Pick me.
Yes, the shrimp. Thank shrimp you. Harris in the background.
Thank you very much. Remember, it's a title. It's not a descriptive. We're busy killing North Koreans and we're about to kill Chinese and we're a threat.
Yes. I don't know.
It's not good. It's not good. Yeah. Not an easy one to answer.
No, like this, fuck me. Like this whole deal. So, this is the same thing. The reason I said it's important to understand this is the same thing that Biden did recently. Biden uh-huh. recently came out and basically made some statement about the U.S. support for the independence of Taiwan, which right. historically has been something that U.S. didn't touch upon.
Exactly.
The line for the last 7 years has been,
yeah.
Well, it's been that Taiwan is officially part of China and always mm-hmm. has been. But we just stay out of it, right?
Yeah, it's not worth it.
It's a bit like Jerusalem and the capital of Israel kind of thing. It's like you don't want to get involved in that. but
win situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even that statement alone by Truman in June of 1950, how could that not put Peking on alert? Obviously, they are very concerned about Formosa. They want it back badly. It's a matter of what, national pride, national honor. And now you're telling me the Americans aren't going to let them have it back or even let them take it. I mean, you're just giving Mao reasons to mess with Americans, even though he doesn't want to. You're really forcing him into a corner on multiple issues.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to point out, I've said a number of times in this episode, I think in the last episode, the Kuomintang were communists. I mean, at this stage, they weren't, but they were originally, right? Sun Yat-sen, who founded the Kuomintang, was a communist.
Yeah.
At some point, they, I guess, differentiated themselves from the Communist Party. Now but they were originally communists.
Right. And now I think they might just be Chiang Kai-shek's guys. I mean,
yeah.
Do they stand for independent China? Or is he's the one that's paying them, so it's probably his private army. Something like Caesar had. But anyway, so, yeah.
Yeah, just before I start getting emails from people telling me that they weren't communists anymore, they were originally communists.
Mao's kind. Yeah.
Yeah, but so this whole thing about supporting Formosa was obviously going to piss off the Chinese, as was sending troops towards their border. Chiao Enlai, who was premier, I think, at some point around here too, as well as foreign minister, was actually much more pissed off about America's support for Formosa than he was about their intervention in Korea.
Yes.
A leading historian of the PLA has written, "The struggle to liberate Taiwan began to be linked to the struggle against U.S. imperialism as such, and the achievement of the former was now seen in the more long-term context of the latter."
Yeah.
So for many years, Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang had been enemy number one for the Chinese.
Yes.
But now the US is starting to become enemy number one.
Number one!
Because they are interfering in Chinese national interests. They're interfering in, the taking of Formosa, and they're interfering in them, interfering in what's happening on the border of China. Yeah. So America is pushing Mao, pushing China to get involved, and turning themselves into an enemy. The Chinese didn't really give two fucks about the United States before this.
Exactly.
Apart from purely socioeconomic, ideological stuff, communist versus capitalist, that kind of thing, part of the greater plan for communist hegemony around the world. China didn't have anything going on in that front at this stage. But at this stage, America's sort of forcing their hand. A journalist called Cuomo Joe wrote in the People's Daily in August, "The American imperialists fondly hope that their armed aggression against Taiwan will prevent us from liberating it. Around China in particular, their designs for a blockade are taking shape in the pattern of a stretched out snake.
Yes.
Starting from South Korea, it stretches to Japan, the Ryukyu Islands, Taiwan, and the Philippines, and then turns up at Vietnam."
Yeah.
If you, 1950, they're saying this, right?
Yes. If you look at a map of Asia, of the Pacific right now, all those countries that Cam just listed, it's almost like a perfect border to keep mainland China out of going any further into the Pacific. So, again, to them, how can this not feel like encirclement, being surrounded, kind of like what the Russians were worried about at the end of World War II? And so it seems to be America's go-to. We're just going to surround you, cut you off, and watch you shrink and die if we don't attack you directly. And the Chinese are feeling that very keenly right now.
Yeah. It's still what the U.S. is doing with Russia today by encircling them with NATO, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The famous not one inch expansion of NATO that they promised Gorbachev and then immediately started signing up countries like Turkey to NATO.
Right.
Exactly. And putting missiles pointed at Russia in the middle of it.
They're the bad guys. Don't you forget it.
Yeah. we've got you surrounded with guns pointed at your head, but yeah. you're the bad guys.
Yeah. I'm afraid of well, you.
We're doing that because you're the bad guys. Right. Well, how do you know we're the bad guys? Because we're pointing guns at you. That's
how you know. Look at a gun.
That's how we know you're the bad
guys. Whichever way the gun is pointing
at. Why would
we
be pointing guns at you if you weren't the bad guys? Like, just stop and think for a second.
You're embarrassing yourselves with such stupid logic. Stop it. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I don't know. Yeah, you can't.
You Russians are so stupid. Oh my God.
Stupid.
So stupid. Where were we? So basically now, so out of everything that Mao's got going on, now he's got this threat to the South. And if he zooms out a little bit, his foreign minister is telling him, you know, it's starting to look like we're going to be cut off from the rest of the world. This shit's getting serious.
Yeah, which of course, apart from the threats of imminent invasion mm-hmm. that leads to, and let's not forget, China had just been invaded yep. through Korea by the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that Russia had been invaded through Poland, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
It's not only that threat, it's also your ability to trade with other countries.
Exactly.
If your borders are blocked and you can't trade as an economy, you're fucked. So this is an economic issue as well as a military security issue.
Yeah.
Now, I think the problem here is during the Korean War, the Americans were looking at China from an ideological perspective. Oh, they won't come into North Korea because of communist ideology means that they take their marching orders from Moscow. Whereas right. Mao was looking at it from a nationalistic perspective, and the Americans don't seem to have considered the nationalistic perspective, which is protecting their security, protecting their economic interests, their ability to trade, et cetera, et cetera.
I thought... And I know you, like myself, have watched the West Wing series through two or three times. And if the West Wing taught me anything, it's you're in the Oval Office and there's the president and he's got his advisors. And the president points to one person and goes, you, I want you to be Mao. I want you to get in Mao's head and I want you to respond to my questions or whatever like you think Mao would. I mean, someone give me a different perspective. You really get the sense that that's not going on. They don't even consider Mao's mentality, the psychology of the leader of the communist leader. They're just thinking everything is about or coming through Moscow. Again, there's just a whole lot of disconnects that look, of course, looking back with hindsight, sound absolutely stupidly ridiculous, but this is the mentality that they had at the time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the problem that they had vis-a-vis the West Wing is mm-hmm. they didn't have Aaron Sorkin.
See, if they did.
Writing for them. Yeah. Yeah.
I would hire him to be my foreign minister.
Any day. My God. Any day.
Slash
any,
lover. Yeah. But anyway, where were we?
Oh, with those glasses and the hair and the suits. Yeah, cocaine.
The speech making, the speechifying, the writing.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a moment.
Just like, while you're fucking me up the ass, just give a speech. Do it in the voice of Toby or, you know, Josh.
Oh, they would end every show with the speech. Someone would get the chance to make, and I love that shit.
Yeah,
anyway,
and the music, da 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 da,
yes, yes, and the fade in and fade out of the American flag and all. I am patriotically hard right now, my friends. I don't even know what that is, but I am.
Your little George Washington is standing at attention.
With his wooden teeth. Anyway. I'm sorry. Sometimes he takes over and he's not that funny. And
Is he wearing the wig today? Has he got the wig on?
Yep, it's a gray wig. Oh, shit, it's a gray wig. I don't think it's dyed. I think it's legit. Shit. Anyway, I'm sorry.
At least you got some hair left down there, my friend.
That's true.
So, Beijing, Peking was, very genuinely worried about an American imperialist army being on their border. And to make matters worse, MacArthur visited Formosa in July.
Good.
He and Chiang Kai-shek gave each other a bit of a reach around. As we mentioned earlier on, I think Chiang offered 33,000 men to fight in North Korea.
Yes.
Truman nearly accepted his offer until I think some brighter minds at the State Department said, probably not a good idea.
Optics? Anyway.
And look, early in the Korean War, the Chinese media were barely mentioning it. But by October, they were printing and broadcasting messages like, resist America, aid Korea, preserve our homes, defend the nation.
Yeah.
There were mass meetings in China where they were denouncing America as blood-stained bandits, murderers, and savages. So, you know, the Chinese internally are really gearing up for this, and they're treating it like a fight for the defense of the homeland.
But it is. I mean, we could talk about Korea or whatever, but when you're having something like that, I mean, it is literally becoming personal for the Chinese. This is no longer abstract. This is no longer, oh, we should protect our fellow Asians. No. This is literally the Americans are coming at our borders and we've got to do something. Everybody would do this. You would find some way to rise up, ramp up the tension and the patriotism, and you would want, you know, bodies with guns at the border because they're being threatened. Everybody would do this. Don't think this is just a Chinese thing at this point.
Of course, everyone would do it, but... Right. When we do it, it's okay. When the communists do it, it's evil.
It's with a montage and some kick-ass guitar music and hot chicks. And we just do it better. Anyway, I'm finished.
When you're feeling down and you need to get up, you put on your boots and you strap on your gun and you go do and you check out the burn and then away. Bit of sax.
Sax. Yeah, that's all I got. And I'm done.
And you get back on top. Oh, yeah, you get back on top. Chrissy and I walk around singing montage songs like that all the time to each other. We love a good family montage. We're always singing montages when we're doing anything.
Secret to your marriage.
Everything goes better with a montage
song.
Yeah.
I agree.
We worked that out a long time.
I concur. Yeah.
Particularly when we're making out. Well, he's taking off her panties and he's going down. Hey, we do it all the time.
We'll see him for a while. So
yeah.
Chrissy brings out the lunch. Because she's got nothing.
30 minutes. 30 minutes later when she's come 15 times, he's going to put his dick in and it'll be over in 23 seconds. Yeah.
A good day for everybody involved. Yeah.
China's acting chief of staff at the time, General Nie Jung-chan, told Panikkar, the Indian ambassador, the People's Republic does not intend to sit back with folded hands and let the Americans come to their border. We know what we are in for, but at all costs, American aggression has got to be stopped. The Americans can bomb us, they can destroy our industries, but they cannot defeat us on land. When he was asked by Panikkar if they were worried about America and using nuclear weapons, he said, we have calculated all that. They may even drop atom bombs on us. What then? They may kill a few million people. Without sacrifice, a nation's independence cannot be upheld. After all, China lives on the farms. What can atom bombs do there? Destroy them.
Right.
Apparently, his grasp of nuclear physics wasn't great, to be honest.
But he was a patriot.
It was only 1950. He didn't really understand. Well, we know it can destroy buildings, but farms, really? Yeah. What can it do on a farm? There's no buildings to destroy.
It's dirt.
Yeah.
If I could, real quick, this reminds me of something that Chiang Kai-shek said early in World War II. He was talking to one of his, might have been his wife, Madam Chiang, and he said, you know what? I feel like I need at least 50 million dead before they'll let me sit at the negotiating table when all this is over with. And so this is not just the Chinese mentality at this particular moment. When you do have a country of billion people, you know, your perception changes a little bit, because even Mussolini said, I have to have at least, what did he say? I can't remember, something like 10 or 50 or 20,000 dead before Hitler will let me sit at the negotiating table with him. So these people are like, look, we already know it's going to be shit. Drop your bombs, bomb us, invade, you know, artillery, whatever, kill a couple million, but we are not giving up. Because again, it's their land, it's their country, it's their border, they're willing to die for it. You ask the average American in South or North Korea at the moment, do they want to be there? Fuck no. So again, the Chinese have all the motivation that they need. They have the willpower to win this thing.
Yeah, and they just fought a civil war where they, where, you know, I don't know what the death toll was, but, you know, lots, millions, and they're like, yeah, that's part of, you know, we get it. Right. Well, a lot of us will die. That's, you know.
What's next? And they were fighting against American-made weapons, you know, the Chiang Kai-shek. So they know, they know how bad it can get. But that's what you
do. Same thing Ho Chi Minh at the time is saying to his people in Vietnam, lots of us are going to die, but if we want to get our country's independence back, this is what we need to do. This is for, we're not doing this for ourselves, we're doing this for our children and our children's children and their children. We're fighting for the independence. And again, like, you know, it's I always have to be reminded myself that China at the time not only just come through this civil war and had to fight the Japanese, but you know, they're still trying to drag themselves out of the Opium Wars when they had been technically conquered by the British and other European allies and subjugated for 80 to 90 years, treated like shit, treated like scum. And before that, you know, been around 10,000 years, you know, the most advanced, invented writing, invented gunpowder, invented
paper,
everything, you know, whatever. Yeah. Marco Polo went there and went, fuck me, check this shit out. These guys are the greatest. So these are people that had been with you know, this great history, who had been subjugated, destroyed by these Europeans for close to a century.
Yes.
And they were like, well, fuck that. We're dragging ourselves out of this. And today the Chinese people remember that. They remember what their great-grandparents went through, and they're determined to never allow that to happen to them again.
Yeah. And now that they're standing up for themselves, they've been labeled evil by us. So
exactly. Because they're not bowing down.
Because you know that's what MacArthur wants. I'm going to do what I want. I want you to like it. And could you quit being communist, please? I mean, that's MacArthur's position. And they know this. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So there were some folks in the State Department of Washington who were urging caution.
Right.
But Dean Acheson thought that China wouldn't intervene. Because, to add another reason, his theory was that they wanted a seat at the UN.
Aww.
And they wouldn't intervene because it might threaten their seat at the UN.
Don't think they care that much.
He would have been the Secretary of State at the time, Dean Acheson, in the Truman administration. He also thought that the PLA was too poorly equipped to fight American armies. But this whole idea, with all of the other ideas we mentioned before, they won't do it because Moscow doesn't want them to, et cetera, et cetera. The other idea was they desperately wanted a seat at the UN, and if they caused trouble fighting the UN, they wouldn't get a seat at the UN, so they wouldn't do that. Now, and I'm sure they did want a seat at the UN, but they probably wanted to, you know, protect their country more than they wanted a seat at the UN.
You think? Yeah, does that sound right?
So hadn't really thought that one through very deeply, exactly. I don't think.
So Dean Acheson, like everyone else we've been talking about, he's got more than one reason why the Chinese are not going to give us any shit. They're not. Yeah, they'll talk a big game and they'll rattle their saber and whatever. But as far as actually attacking us, I don't see that happen because Dean Acheson can't see it that way. He's going to assume, like everyone else, well, it makes sense this way. And so the Chinese, who are very smart people, they'll see it the way that I see it, and that way there won't be a war. I mean, again, they're just literally, what is it, projecting. They're projecting their views of how this should go onto the Chinese. And no one's asking Mao. No one's the Americans are not talking to the Chinese at all. They have no idea. They're all making this up. All on their own, and they're just figuring or guessing what the Chinese are going to do. It makes no sense.
Do you know what language Dean Acheson was speaking?
No.
Cantonese, I think, is what it was.
Well, to be multilingual is an impressive thing. I know you're working on it now. I'm still working on my Cantonese.
Cunnilingual. Always working on my cunnilingual as well as multilingual.
I can tell by your artwork. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but as I said before, like, Acheson wasn't the only one who thought that the Chinese weren't equipped to fight the American armies. Right. There were Chinese generals who agreed with him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they didn't want to do this. They didn't think they were ready to do this. On October 8th, the day after America crossed the 38th parallel, Mao issued the order for the Chinese People's Volunteers to resist the attacks of United States imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for many years, it was believed in the West that the Chinese army, the 4th Field Army, which went into North Korea a week later, was under the command of Lin Pao.
Right.
Who was one of Mao's closest associates, one of the heroes of the Civil War. The Chinese today are very firm in saying it wasn't Lin Pao who led that army.
Right.
Now, this might be because when he died in a mysterious plane crash in 1971, known as the Lin Bao incident, he was declared an enemy of the revolution by Mao. Basically, he became Mao's Sienus.
Yes.
All of the problems of the Cultural Revolution, et cetera, et cetera, he tried to blame on Lin Pao. But there's also sufficient evidence today to corroborate the story that Lin Pao wasn't in command of the army when it crossed over. Mm-hmm. Military sources say that in the autumn of 1950, Mao had in fact urged Lin to take command of an army to fight in Korea and was his first choice.
Mm-hmm.
But Lin didn't believe that China was capable of it.
Right.
Didn't believe that the PLA was able to take on the United States.
We're not ready,
urged that they delay it for a year or more so the army could be retrained and re-equipped.
Does that make sense?
Well,
the Americans are right the fuck there. But
they're not going to come over the border unless, in theory, they're not going to cross the border unless they're provoked by the Chinese. So he's saying, let them get up to the border, let us retrain for a year, and then we'll go in and kick them out, I guess.
That's fine. Training doesn't actually create or produce new modern weapons, but there are certain advantages of that, you know, communication, practice, all that kind of stuff, muscle memory. But again, they would still be fighting with antiquated hell, even older weapons by then. But that's not something, but let's wait a year or two is not something that Mao wants to hear.
Well, they could also put a new lick of paint on the old weapons, so they look new. And there's great psychological benefits, you know, when you get
a shiny gun.
It's like a new haircut.
Yeah.
New haircut, new suit, high-heeled boots, new flares.
Let me know when you're done. No rush, but let me know when you're done.
You feel like a new man, you know? You just feel, you know, a new personality.
Yeah.
$1 million. Yeah.
Are you done?
I'm done.
How did that all work out for you?
Yeah, the same, but I felt better about it. Right. I felt good. You
as
know,
the bullet
felt
was going in, I was like, I'm going to look great at this funeral. Oh, my God, I'm so snazzy.
Lin Pao was mostly worried about U.S. Air power.
Yeah, should be.
Coming in and blowing the fuck out of him.
Right.
But Marshal Peng Tihai, on the other hand,
is that third tone?
Yeah, it is third tone.
Okay.
Who was another hero of the Civil War up there with Lin Pao. He said, look, 1951, 1952, it's really not going to make that much difference. You know, imperialists could be shown to be paper tigers, he said, if we just stand up and say, not on my watch.
I am not
gonna die today.
You fucking with me. You don't want to fuck with me. You know what I'm saying? Because you'll get fucked back. That's all I'm saying. No, I don't know how to say that in Mandarin. But anyway. No, but he was like, yeah, no.
Well, can you say it in Cantonese?
Cantonese. Actually, that was the Cantonese accent that I was using. I didn't even know I knew that. That was pretty fucking amazing. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, but He's like, yeah, let's stand up to them. Yes, we've already accepted that some of us are going to die. Maybe they're not as tough as they think they are, but they certainly don't have the desire to win this as much as we do. Let's get it on. Why wait 2 years?
He told his staff that willpower and motivation could overcome any shortcomings of equipment.
He's not wrong. Now,
you've been trying to tell your wife that for 15 years.
I have.
You haven't convinced her yet. Like the series of lovers that she's taken is evidence of that. But you put up a good fight. Like I give you credit for the fact that you persist.
Right. It's in stages. The first stage, I was like, I've heard this said on Dr. Oz that if you use your penis a lot, it gets bigger. So for the first year went by, that tricked her. And then the second year, I was like, you know, I think I could really work on my technique if you would help me. A year go by, she goes, well, I'm still not impressed, and I didn't stay awake this time. So, and that's when D'Angelo, who I don't want to talk about, came into our lives. He came in Heather, but he came into our lives in a general sense. Numerous times in one night. Young guy, young strapping guy.
If Heather ever listens to this show, you are so fucking divorced, man, I tell you.
Can I sleep on your couch, Cam? Yeah, that's what would happen, yeah. So nobody email Tommy G. Don't you dare email her this, okay?
Oh, my God.
Go focus on your foreplay. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One of Peng's former officers says that Peng, from beginning to end, sort of treated the Korean War as merely an extension of the liberation war against the Kuomintang.
Ah, yeah.
This is just the Civil War continued because the Americans are supporting the Kuomintang, so this is just, you know, exactly. Same thing.
Yeah.
According to a memoir published in Peng's name in 1981, he actually died in prison in 1974. On the 4th of October, he found himself summoned to headquarters as commander-in-chief in northwest China, was told to fly to Peking to attend a conference, arrived there to discover the Central Committee already in session, debating the dispatch of troops to Korea. At the session the next day, he was appointed to command them. And the whole idea of calling them volunteers was just a way to try and prevent an all-out war with the United States, to say, well, we're not actually sending in an army and going to war. This is just a volunteer army. We didn't even know this was happening. They just turned, like Russia tried that a few years ago in the Ukraine, right?
Right.
They're like, what? The Crimea?
Take off their...
They're volunteers. We didn't even... No. Who are you guys?
That's how much they care.
I told you. Yeah.
Stop it. Don't do it. Egg on my face.
Tell you, these guys, they just love a bit of argy-bargy. What can I do? Yeah, what can we do? What can we do?
And they're already there, so... Yeah.
Peng, by the way, ended up being a critic of Mao's Cultural Revolution and was imprisoned. But the difference between him and Lin Biao is that Peng was rehabilitated by Deng Xiaoping in 1979.
Oh, gotcha.
So he's probably Pong and Dong. Was rehabilitated in 1979 and is considered a great Chinese hero today.
Right? Oh. Yeah. Pong power.
So, right. Yeah. Power to the Pong. That's the title of this episode.
I don't know. So only volunteers because of, I guess, maybe if the Americans found that conscripted or whatever the fuck soldiers were coming to kill them, they might get more upset. So it's volunteers. It's volunteers.
Volunteers, yeah. So we're not declaring war.
No.
It's just some guys.
This is a police action.
Just some guys.
And we're volunteers. Yeah.
There's just some guys, yeah. China's initial force that they sent to Korea was organized as the 8th Army Group, comprised of four armies, each of three 10,000-man infantry divisions with a regiment of cavalry and five regiments of artillery.
God damn.
They crossed the Yalu bridges at night. Their first objective was to establish a wide enough bridgehead on the south bank of the Yalu to give themselves room.
Yeah. 130,000 men. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus. So the 42nd Army came first. They blocked the road running up to the Chosin Reservoir. The 38th Army crossed the road from Hoi Chon. The 40th Army came down towards Puk Chin. And the 50th and 66th Armies followed.
Yeah.
So all in all, they ended up, you know, with a reasonable-sized force from the get-go.
Right. Now, you've got 130,000 men. You've got artillery. You've got trucks. You've got whatever else that they have. They're moving closer to the border. They're crossing over the border. And I hear you asking, dear listener, well, how quickly did the CIA get word to Truman? To which I would reply, not quickly enough. So these troops are moving between October 13th to the 25th. The intelligence staff of MacArthur's army, and there's several of them, they don't pick up on any of this. And again, they were thinking that the Chinese lacked the right equipment to go to war. But here's the great irony. The Chinese sneak across low-grade level technology. In fact, in some ways, it was that low-level technology that helped them get across without being spotted. And so that actually worked out to their advantage. And again, the Americans aren't thinking that anybody is going to attack them because of their arrogance and their racism. And so they literally do not look for it. And because of that, they do not see it.
Yeah, I mean, the CIA had said that based on their assessments of the intelligence, China was amassing hundreds of thousands, but they didn't actually see any evidence. MacArthur's guys didn't see any evidence of 130,000 troops right. moving towards the border. Now, part of this is because the Americans were dumb as fuck, and the other part of it was the Chinese were really good at camouflage.
Yes.
But also, they didn't have any of the conventional means of a modern military. They didn't have any wireless traffic or mechanized activity, supply dumps. 100,000
trucks or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so they couldn't. A lot of that stuff, which was maybe easier to spot, didn't happen. They were just guys walking through the jungle, getting closer and closer. But yeah, the main thing, I guess, the main reason is the American generals weren't looking for it. They weren't expecting it. They didn't really believe that was a possibility, so they weren't looking for it.
Right.
Like the first time you found Heather in bed with D'Angelo, you were like shocked. You hadn't even considered. It took you a year, I seem to remember, for you to even be able to begin to process it.
Right.
She was telling you, I'm fucking a black dude. And you were like, what?
I'm not black. Why do you keep love me? Saying
you
that?
You said you love me. Yeah, I can't. Love right. What? Can't is that enough? What you said?
Do I have 30 seconds to spare? Well, yes, I do. Oh, that's a different conversation. Sorry. We experienced this in a college course. You probably experienced this in a jail cell. It doesn't really matter where you get it from. It's like you sit in a room and someone says, you've got 30 seconds and I want you to count up how many red things you see. And you panic and you look around and you come up with your number. And then they go, okay, time up. Tell me how many green things you saw. So again, the Americans aren't looking for it. It does not exist in their head. It cannot be possible. And they do not see what they do not believe is possible. And the Chinese use that brilliantly and come across the Yalu River. So,
yeah, the Americans were convinced the war was basically over, as you said earlier.
Yes.
On the night of the 5th to the 6th of November, after the disaster of the 8th Cavalry and the ROK units being crushed, the UN command was briefly sufficiently worried to consider a major withdrawal. But on the morning of the 6th of November, they found that these Chinese forces that they'd been fighting against along the front disappeared.
What?
And ghosts. They were gone. They pulled a what's his name? Kevin Spacey, Usual Suspects. Kaiser Sose.
Right.
They pulled a Kaiser Sose. They just vanished.
Yeah. So the Americans and the South Koreans are getting their ass handed to them. They've had actual units wiped out, obliterated. They're panicking. They're thinking about pulling out. The next day, sun comes up and they're like, the enemy is gone. What the fuck
we
do you do that?
It's
we
over.
Won again. We won again. 2-0. Sorry. Oh my God, that's crazy. They don't know what to do.
So, of course, the US and the UN immediately translated this as victory.
A banner. They get a big banner.
Look, we let them kick our asses.
It was part of the plan, right?
So they would give up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's what we're going with. So really, that's what you're presenting to the president? Yeah. Yeah.
I'll keep my job. Yeah.
They kicked our asses so badly.
Right. They got bored.
They figured it was time to retreat. Yeah.
Right.
Because they knew that we were going to come back and really put up a big fight next time. I think that's what must have happened. Yeah.
Because before that, they asked me and they said, Ray, so when he had his boot halfway up your ass, what was going on? And I was like, you don't understand. I was playing a deep game. No pun intended. I was playing a deep game at that moment. And that's what the Americans in the South Korea
5D
doing.
Chess, baby. Five-dimensional chess. That's what I was playing.
Hello? Was that a horn? Did someone beep? Anyway, so the point is the Americans are getting their ass kicked. They're losing men, probably thousands of men. This looks like the beginning of the end. And then suddenly the Chinese fade away, not unlike a disease after you get a shot. That was I shouldn't have said that. That was bad. But the point is, they're suddenly gone, and so the Americans go from panic to bewilderment.
To celebrations.
To celebrate. We won. Fucking awesome.
Now, military sources in China today say what happened was there were problems with supply and coordination.
Right.
And they figured, okay, we've warned the Americans that we're willing and ready to, you know, step up and intervene.
Yeah.
And now we'll just pull back and see if they got the message while we coordinate some of the stuff that we need to do in the background. The Chinese today also claim that their purpose in withdrawing was to encourage the enemy's arrogance. Now, which one of those you want to believe? They had supply problems, or they just decided they'd send a message out there, they'd see what would happen, or they would encourage their arrogance, any combination of those. But MacArthur, of course, translated the whole thing. It was that the Chinese had shot their bolt and given up, been frightened off, and so he continued his drive towards the Yalu, and the Chinese, in their turn, were prepared to meet it. And we'll be back next time.
A short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima.